Welcome back to the deep dive. So if you're watching the housing market, you are probably trying to make sense of a constant conflict. Inflation seems to be moderating,
Hard to
but
hike.
rates just they bounce around, stubbornly refusing to drop back to the levels we all, got used to. We
Exactly.
want to cut through all that noise today and give you the clearest possible picture of the mortgage market right now.
And that tension you mentioned, that space between the expectation for lower rates and the reality of this persistent volatility, that's really the defining story for early December 2025.
Right.
So our mission here is to move beyond the headlines. We're going to connect the dots for you, from Wall Street's bets on the Federal Reserve to the bond market's reaction, and finally to the actual rate, quotes, you, the borrower, are seeing today.
And we have to start with the core number. As we head into the first full week of December, what are we looking at?
The big one, the national average for a 30-year fixed mortgage, according to Freddie Mac data for the week ending December 4th, is 6.19%.
6.19%.
That 6.19% figure tells a pretty complex story right out of the gate. On one hand, it's a sign of some slight easing. It's down from 6.23% the week before.
Okay, so a little bit of relief.
A little bit, but on the other hand, if you look back a full year, we're down pretty significantly from 6.69% in December of 2024.
And that's a meaningful difference for a buyer.
It's a huge improvement in borrowing power compared to last year's peaks, assuming you have a solid financial profile.
Okay, so let's unpack this. Let's start with those definitive purchase numbers for the beginning of the month. What's the score right now across the board for someone looking to buy?
Right. Sticking with the purchase averages, that 30-year fixed is, as we said, 6.19%.
And the 15-year.
For listeners who might be thinking about a shorter term, to pay it off faster or get a slightly lower rate, the 15-year fixed mortgage average is sitting at 5.44%.
But that's also down a bit week over week.
It is. It's a decent ease, down from 5.51% just 7 days prior. The market is definitely breathing a bit of a sigh of relief after all that volatility we saw in the mid-fall.
So the purchase market is enjoying a bit of a short-term easing trend. But we found something really interesting, a fantastic indicator of just how fragile this downward move is when we looked at the refinance side of the market.
Yes.
What's that nuance?
It's a perfect illustration of volatility. So while the general averages for purchases were easing, the refinance rates, which tend to react, a bit quicker to daily market shifts,
They went the other way.
they actually ticked in the opposite direction just for a moment. Zillow's data, which tracks daily quotes, showed the 30-year fixed refinance rate at about 6.10% as of December 8th. But the critical insight here is that this figure had ticked up about 0.13 percentage points from the week before.
Wait, so if the collective wisdom is that things are moderating, why would that one data point tick up? I mean, doesn't that suggest a temporary liquidity issue or some kind of risk that the builder headlines are just ignoring?
It absolutely suggests lenders are still nervous. They price risk in instantly. That slight upward tick, it could mean a bond auction didn't go as well as expected, or maybe a piece of economic data came out that day that spooked investors.
So it's a reminder.
It's a great reminder that the market is this high-speed game of risk assessment, and you just cannot rely on the national weekly averages alone.
And that leads us to the crucial caveat for everyone listening. These numbers, 6.19%, 5.44%, these are national averages. They're based on a perfect, typical
A
borrower.
mythical perfect borrower.
Right. Often with a 740 plus credit score, 20% down,
Yep.
your rate will be unique.
Absolutely. Your specific rate depends entirely on your credit, your loan-to-value ratio, and the product you choose. Whether it's a conventional loan or a specialized one like an FHA or a VA loan, they all have different pricing structures. Never, ever treat the national average as a guaranteed offer.
Okay, so we've established the what, 6.19%, and that's slight easing.
Yep.
But that number is just the output of a much more complex engine running underneath, right?
Mm-hmm.
So let's pull back the hood. Let's look at those economic levers, the bond market, and those investor expectations.
This is the real deep dive. The primary driver for long-term lending, like mortgages, is the bond market, specifically the 10-year U.S. Treasury yield.
Right.
When that yield goes down, mortgage rates usually follow. And the reason we've seen this easing recently is because investors are betting, and betting heavily, that inflation will continue to moderate.
Which then increases the chance of Fed cuts down the road.
Exactly. It increases the likelihood of additional Federal Reserve rate cuts in the future.
So, to be clear, it's not the Fed walking into a room today and setting the 30-year rate at 6.19%. It's the collective forward-looking guess of thousands of investors trying to price in what the whole economic landscape will look like in 3, 6, or even 12 months.
Precisely. The Fed's actions, they really influence short-term lending. The long-term mortgage rate is dictated by investor confidence and that overall inflation outlook. But there is a critical factor keeping us stubbornly above 6%.
And what's that?
It's the mortgage spread.
The spread. Okay, this is a crucial and I think often overlooked piece of the puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us what the spread is and why it matters so much right now.
So historically, the rate on a 30-year fixed mortgage usually sits about, say, 1.5 to 1.8 percentage points above that 10-year treasury yield.
Okay.
That difference is the spread. It accounts for the risk, the lender's profit, the cost of servicing the loan, all of it.
And where is that spread today? Because I'm guessing it's not 1.8.
It's bloated. It's way higher than the historical norm. Sometimes it's been reaching 2.5 or even 3 percentage points above the 10-year yield.
Wow. Why?
Lenders are doing this because of lingering market uncertainty, liquidity concerns, and, well, frankly, because they can in a low inventory environment.
So if that spread just went back to normal?
If that spread tightened back to its historical average, we would instantly see 30-year rates fall back into the mid to high fives, even if the 10-year yield didn't move an inch. So the key to getting rates meaningfully below 6% isn't just the Fed cutting its short-term rate. It's the bond market and lenders gaining enough confidence for that spread to finally narrow. That sounds like a structural issue that will keep us tethered here for a while.
It does. And the general expert consensus is that rates will probably hover slightly above 6% well into 2026.
So no big drops coming soon.
We're definitely off the high peaks, but the volatility persists. And unless that spread narrows dramatically, we are very unlikely to see a return to those ultra-low pandemic levels. The short-term trend is easing, but the long-term trend is stabilization at this new higher level.
Let's translate that into actual dollars. Because when we talk about these percentage shifts, they sound really abstract. We won't belabor the math, but let's just use a standard $400,000 loan amount to put the rate difference in perspective.
Yeah, it's the material impact on your household budget that really matters. So for that $400,000 loan at the current 6.19% average rate, the monthly principal and interest payment is approximately $2,447. Okay, $2,447. Now compare that to where we might have been 6 months ago with rates around, say, 7.00%.
At 7.00%, that same monthly payment jumps to approximately $2,661.
So that's what, over $200 a month difference?
That difference, about $214 per month or over $2,500 a year. That is why even a small shift of just 0.5% fundamentally changes a buyer's maximum comfortable budget. It shows you exactly why monitoring these daily movements isn't just some academic exercise.
That $214 difference is substantial. I want to go back to the data sources for a second, though. We mentioned Freddie Mac, we mentioned Zillow. Mm. Can you just quickly explain how they collect their data differently and why the source actually matters?
Absolutely. So the 6.19% figure comes from the Freddie Mac Primary Mortgage Market Survey, the PMMS. It is a weekly average collecting data from lenders based on applications they received over a 7-day period.
From Thursday to Wednesday.
Right, Thursday through Wednesday. So it's really a snapshot in time.
And what about the daily rates?
Those daily numbers, like the one showing that little refi uptick, they often come from large marketplace platforms. They're tracking real-time quotes, applications, rate locks. They're highly sensitive to what the bond market does intraday.
But the key limitation for both, as we said, is they rely on that perfect borrower.
That mythical perfect borrower, yes. They are rarely tailored for specialized products or, importantly, for regional differences.
Right. And the national average is merely the starting point. How do these rates translate to specific, diverse local markets? I mean, we know the New York reality is pretty extreme. But how does 6.19% impact affordability elsewhere?
In high-cost metro areas like New York City, the impact is almost entirely defined by the home price. Even with rates a little lower than a year ago, the median home price there means the loan amount is just so high that the monthly payment remains punishing.
So for most first-time buyers in a place like New York, the small rate drop is what? Not enough to overcome the sheer size of the loan?
It's completely insufficient to overcome the sheer volume of the principal.
And this brings us back to that structural issue we talked about, the legacy mortgage problem. It's so acute in markets like New York.
It's a quiet, profound drag on mobility. The data shows this huge segment of existing homeowners in New York still hold legacy mortgages below 6%. Many are even below 4%.
Right. So if you're sitting on a 3.5% rate,
the psychological barrier to selling your house and trading into a new 6.19% mortgage is just immense.
I know several people who are agonizing over this right now. They're functionally locked into their homes. They can't move for a new job or because their family is growing because the economics just don't work.
And that reluctance keeps inventory tightly constrained. It creates a domino effect. First-time buyers face enormous competition for the very few available properties, which keeps local prices elevated, and it just mitigates any benefit they might have gotten from that slightly lower national 6.19% rate.
But the picture isn't uniform across the country, is it? I mean, how does that 6.19% rate affect a high-growth but maybe lower-cost secondary market?
That's where we see the activity. In markets like, say, Nashville or Phoenix or parts of the Midwest, where the average loan amount is significantly lower, maybe it's $300,000 instead of $700,000, that 6.19% rate translates into a payment that's far more manageable.
So the lower rate actually makes a difference there.
It is triggering meaningful buyer activity in those high-growth regions because the affordability threshold is just so much easier to cross.
So you end up with this two-tiered housing market, paralyzing pain in the big, high-cost cities, and a slow, cautious recovery in these high-growth, lower-cost areas.
Exactly. The rate is the same, but the local price environment completely dictates the effect.
Okay, let's transition now to the decision framework. Because for you listening, the ultimate question is always, is now the right time to act? Let's start with the buyers, the ones looking at that 6.19% national average. Who should be moving forward right now?
The decision to buy is always, you know, primarily a personal one, regardless of the rate. You should move forward if you meet those non-negotiable financial criteria. Stable, long-term employment. You have enough funds for a responsible down payment and reserves.
And the big one.
And crucially, if the current monthly payment at 6.19% fits comfortably within your long-term budget.
What are the advantages of locking in a purchase now rather than waiting? Especially since we don't think rates are going to suddenly dramatically drop.
Well, you secure the property now and you stop trying to time the market, which is, you know, it's impossible.
True.
But the biggest advantage is you secure the ability to refinance later. If rates do fall to, say, 5.5% in 2027, you haven't missed out on the home. You can just execute a refinance and lower your payment then. Plus, in certain local pockets where buyer demand is slowed, you might actually have more room to negotiate on price than you did 18 months ago.
Okay, now let's flip it. Let's look at refinancing. With that refi average around 6.10%, when does it make financial sense for an existing homeowner to even run the numbers?
Refinancing is a pure cost-benefit analysis. It makes sense if your current mortgage rate is meaningfully higher, say you have an older loan in the mid-sixes or high sevens.
Right.
It also makes sense if you're holding an adjustable rate mortgage, an ARM, and you want to lock in a fixed rate for stability, even if the rate difference isn't huge.
We often talk about the threshold for a profitable refi. What's the general rule of thumb there? How big does the rate difference need to be?
You have to lower your rate enough to justify the closing costs, which can be anywhere from 2 to 5% of the loan value. So the standard threshold is that refinancing is usually most beneficial when you can lower your existing rate by 0.5 to 0.75 percentage points or more.
And you have to calculate your break-even point.
You have to calculate that break-even point, how long it will take for the monthly savings to cover the upfront costs.
So just to be clear, if your current loan is, say, 5.5%, refinancing today at 6.10% would be a mistake.
A huge mistake, unless you had a very specific, compelling reason.
Like debt consolidation.
Exactly. If debt consolidation is the goal, you know, rolling high-interest credit card debt into a lower-rate mortgage, that changes the math entirely. The comparison isn't 6.10% versus 5.5%. It's 6.10% versus 25% on a credit card. And that is often a very smart move.
That provides some great clarity on both sides of the market. So to sum up this deep dive, we're seeing rates bouncing pretty consistently above 6%, a level that's driven less by the Fed's short-term rate and much more by the persistence of that historically wide mortgage spread.
A spread that reflects lender uncertainty and risk. And that uncertainty means rates can change daily, sometimes even intraday. The key takeaway for you, the borrower, is that headlines are just a compass bearing. The real insight only comes from modeling your personal financial scenario.
Which brings us to our final provocative thought for you to chew on this week. We spent a good amount of time discussing that large segment of homeowners who are functionally locked into their properties because they're still holding those low legacy mortgages from the pandemic era loans that are often below 4%.
Hmm.
So, given that this low inventory constraint is likely to persist as long as rates stay above 6%, which prevents the normal flow of housing supply, what long-term structural impact will this have? What does it mean for overall economic mobility, for wealth building, for housing availability for the next generation of potential buyers?
Are we creating a perpetual inventory crisis that only a massive building boom or maybe a sharp price correction can possibly resolve?
Something to think about.
Consider that wider implication, and we'll be back next time for another deep dive.